This is The Guardian.
I'm Grace Dent, and this is Comfort Eating from The Guardian. A podcast where we pay homage to the lesser celebrated foods in life. Because even as a restaurant critic, I believe the food that matters most is often that snack you cobble together when you're curled up on the sofa. Each week, I ask my guest to lift the lid on what comfort foods have seen them through their lives. Because you can tell a lot about a person from what they eat behind closed doors.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello friends, you find me back in my kitchen rummaging through the cupboards for something to eat before this week's guest arrives. Supplies are a bit low. I've just got back from Glasgow. I've been reviewing restaurants all weekend, but I am still living out of a suitcase in the middle of the living room floor. Maybe sort that out at some point. What do I eat before sitting down with the former deputy leader of the Labour Party? I've decided this week on one of my most secret pleasures, which is packet sage and onion stuffing. You know, the quite powdery stuff. I'm going to make it and I'm going to have it in a white bread roll with butter. What do I dip it in? Brown sauce, obviously. Tom Watson was a politician for almost 20 years, serving as the MP for West Bromwich East and quickly making his way to the very heart of Westminster. He was elected deputy leader of the Labour Party under Jeremy Corbyn before somewhat abruptly walking away from it all in 2019. He's undergone a huge physical transformation, going from 22 stone at his heaviest to losing 8 stone and even, he says, reversing his type 2 diabetes. So what comfort foods have sustained him? And how easy is it to stick to a self-imposed diet like that? I wonder if stuffing sandwiches are part of his healthy plan.
It's actually delicious.
Tom Watson, welcome to Comfort Eating.
Hi, Grace.
Thank you for coming.
Well, it's good to be here. I'm looking at, I've had a little nib around your room where you've been outside. Because when you were interviewing Stephen Fry, you were talking about pictures on the wall.
Yes.
And the house not being done. So you've been busy since that interview.
I haven't actually been busy myself. What I did was I rang a company and got somebody to come round and do bits because I can't drill a nail in a wall. I think I maybe could, but I don't trust myself. Can you put pictures up?
I'm an utter disaster at everything. And I'm trying to renovate a house in the Midlands now. But I mean like proper renovation. Like there's rooms without electricity.
Like grand designs.
No, not
like more, Escape to the Chateau.
More like I'm living in a derelict house and I need to stop the roof from leaking.
The good news is that I love getting to see what people eat in the comfort of their own, if they have any comfort in their own home. I love getting to see what they eat there. And I'm getting especially excited about your snack because I can smell it.
Oh, God. Right.
But I've had a good think and I don't even know what food group it is because it's like, it's a really pungent and I'm going to say meaty type thing, but I don't know what meat.
Yeah.
It could be anything.
Okay, so
what are we eating today?
What it's sold as is lamb kebab with chili sauce and avocado.
Hang on, one of these words is not like the other.
I guess this is like, I'm a kid from the Midlands and I used to go to pubs a lot and live on kebabs for many years before I lost a lot of weight and got healthy. And when I kind of swing into recklessness, I go straight back to kebabs. But
where
because I became an MP and a little bit middle class, and I would, if I got in drunk, there would be always be avocados in the fridge, which go really well with chili sauce. So I'd sort of throw an avocado in as well.
I need to see this thing. Please, please unveil the snack. Oh, my God. It's the classic polystyrene yellow. Oh, hang on a minute.
Don't, it's not very Guardian, this is it?
Is this the actual kind of, I'm going to say elephant's leg? Oh, Lord.
You don't have to eat it if you don't want to.
No, but I am actually, I'm not going to say contractually obliged, but feel like
I promise you.
Oh, I've never even seen the meat look like that before. It's very, there's more of it.
Well, there's one each. So, and
have you not got any bread to go with it? Oh,
obviously I don't have bread anymore. I'm low carb.
Oh, Tom, no.
So you're looking horrified.
Right, okay. What I'm going to say is, the best part of a kebab for me is the carby bits around
the naan bread,
around the actual meat.
Yeah.
And my idea of hell in a kebab shop is that because what is it? I mean, what kind of meat is it? Is it lamb?
It's probably, it's got lamb in the title. I don't know what, I mean, there'll be a bit of lamb in there. I always think there's probably, you know, there might be a few hooves and hairy ears and stuff, I suppose. But
I've never seen the meat not in the context of with the sauce and the salad and the bread wrapped around it to kind of hide that. And what I'm amazed at is how wobbly and pink and gelatinous.
Yeah, that's the fact. It's got a bit cold since it's come back. It's worse if you have it in the fridge for 12 hours. Now, I'm opening these. I think this is the chili sauce.
You see, I was going to the...
That is red hot chili sauce.
Is it? Did you just sip that sauce?
I put my tongue in the top.
Did you just sip it like it was a rare whiskey?
Well, it is rare these days. Oh, that's... I've not had this for ages.
Oh, my God. I can't even... It's like that bit does look like a hoof.
Oh, no, Grace. I'm feeling anxious now.
Oh, my God. Absolutely. It's meat.
Spit it out if you want. Oh, don't be sick. I can't make you be sick on your own podcast. Go on, spit it out. Go spit it out.
I'm like, you've broken me.
Oh, great. Just if you don't know this, but I'm on my own in her living room. She's gone to the kitchen to be sick, and I'm stuffing this down my face before because she's going to ask me loads of questions when she's back. I've got to say, this is like visiting an old friend. Can I come again?
Yes. You grew up in Kidderminster. The original Watson household consisted of you, your mum and your dad, your younger brother Dan and your little sister Meg.
Yeah.
So to what extent did homemade food feature when you were growing up?
Well, I'm of that generation. Obviously, you didn't have microwaves in the early 70s.
Mm.
So a lot of it was homemade food. And I was a very finickety kid with food. You know, Richard Corrigan would probably love my mum's steak and kidney pies, but they made me want to be sick and I couldn't eat them.
Was it the kidney?
It was a kidney. Well, she did all that. And there was a lot of food and there were great Sunday roasts. Like, I remember my dad would go to the Haberley Club, working men's club.
Yeah, flat roof.
Flat roof, still there.
Yeah.
Just about. And that would be, we'd have like pop and crisps and watching put money in the fruit machine, and then we'd go back and mum would have like an amazing roast beef with homemade Yorkshire pudding and like just everything, gravy, homemade gravy. things started going a bit wrong when my mum and dad split up.
Mm. How old were you then?
I was about 9 or 10. And she did a sociology degree at Worcester College of Higher Education. And all of a sudden, things started going a bit wrong in the kitchen. I remember coming home one day and there's a massive poster of Andy Gibb in the kitchen. And she's like, you know, reading this guy called Karl Marx. And, you know, it's all like she started having conversations about having to cook for ourselves.
Yeah,
I love the microwave. I remember us going to what was Kidderminster's equivalent of the Ideal Home exhibition. Yeah. At the youth centre. There was like a demonstration of a thing called a microwave, and they did little tiny bits of sausage warmed up in there that they were giving away for free. And like we pestered mum to get this microwave. She was going, oh, no, there's radiation and they're very expensive. And look, the sausages are still white. He doesn't, but I mean, we just wanted to warm up sausages in the microwave.
Yeah.
So all those little labour-saving devices that had weird marketing things in the, we went for them. The life-changing moment was obviously the Breville toaster.
Oh.
I mean, even now.
glad you said that. I'm sorry. I feel exactly the same.
Oh, I love that. I lived on them. I lived on Breville. I lived on cheese and ham Breville toasters for a good 2 years. And
fact it sealed the edges.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you put the butter on the outside of the bread.
Yeah.
So it made it all delicious.
And there's a real art form to it. Because if you didn't get the bread right, the cheese would melt out and you'd really hate yourself for it because you'd have to try and scoop it up and burn your fingers.
Tell me what mealtimes were like.
I mean, you have a funny childhood when you grow up in a political family. I mean, no one wanted to be, it was all part-time. And there was no sort of inherited, you shall be an MP one day, son, and the land will be yours. It was, you'd sort of sit in it, you know, trying to get your fair share of the food when there's this conversation going on. So I remember my earliest memory, the earliest sort of political thing was Watergate, but me thinking that Watergate was in some way some scandal related to a dam. I didn't realise it was a location because I was piecing it all together.
Yeah.
And then I remember banana sandwiches in the miners' strike when the electricity was off, sitting on a bed with my brother, a bit frightened because the lights are off, and mum giving us this banana sandwich and me saying, why are the lights off, mum? And she said, because Mr. Heath won't pay the miners enough money, son. And then being really irritated with Ted Heath because so you get in the strands of a political argument but not organising it. But it was always around food and in my dad's case in particular, drink. You know, there'd always be, you know, he'd be coming back from pubs or meetings or whatever.
So politics was part of your life from a very early age. But what else were you into as a young teenager?
We worshipped the specials. You know, we wore our Fred Perrys and we were from the West Midlands. So, you know, and I still see the specials now.
Yeah.
And obsession with David Bowie. Mm. And then I remember Soul Mining by The, which I still think is the greatest album ever made. But I was a member of the ABBA fan club.
What?
You know, I loved the look.
Yeah.
I had a little ABBA sweat top and all of this was before I was a cool ska boy.
The two things aren't.
No.
You can't do them both at the same time.
I was very uncool as a kid. I was nerdy before that word existed. So I had little obsessions. I got obsessively into Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, God.
And my hero was Ian Livingston. And actually, I've been helping sort some stuff out in my mum's house. And I found all my old Dungeons and Dragons gear, all the characters and all the little maps you'd write when you were... Do you know about Dungeons and Dragons?
I know what Dungeons and Dragons is. I don't know how you play it.
They called it a fantasy role-playing game. So you have to, like, pretend that you're a dwarf or an orc.
Do you play it by yourself?
No.
You kind of have to because you're into Dungeons and Dragons?
You need similarly inadequate men of a certain age to be able to do it. So
how would you describe your relationship with food when you were a child and a young teen?
I mean, my relationship with food is very complicated and I'm still trying to understand it now.
Yeah.
And I mean, you don't get to be 22 stone for over a decade if you don't have a particularly great relationship with food. But I never thought that at the time. And I would now probably describe myself as someone who has some kind of compulsive eating issue.
Did you then?
No, I had no... A friend of mine said, you know, I've had an eating disorder all my life. And I said, oh, I've never had that, but I do have disordered eating. And then we sort of stopped. Yes. And she looked at me. And the obvious thing in the middle of the conversation was, what's the difference? And it was actually one of those idiot moments where at the age of 54, you realise something about yourself. Yeah. And so I kind of think I've had some form of eating disorder, either compulsive eating or... And like when I was started to get healthy, I changed my nutrition and gave up sugar. And I got better very quickly. I got well again. I lost weight and turned my health around. And I was obviously a sugar addict.
Yeah.
And I thought I've shaken off an addiction. I'm okay now. But obviously I think my compulsive eating had led to the sugar addiction rather than the sugar addiction leading to the...
Were you one of those people that if you couldn't just have a bit, you would have to have everything right there and then?
Yeah. So as we're talking now, I'm thinking, I hope she didn't throw those two kebabs away. Are they really in the kitchen? Because I really fancy eating them now.
Interesting.
When I started to write a book, I wrote this book, Downsizing, about my health journey, right?
Yeah.
And when I started to write it, I thought, oh, I haven't got much content here. And so I emailed all my friends and said, you know, do you remember, you know, you probably don't. Yeah, have you ever sort of been eating with me and noticed anything or whatever? And like my inbox just started collapsing. And
there were like these stories. Like, yeah, we have actually.
And there was the one family member said, well, if I've got a mental image of you, it's you literally walking into our house all the time with a phone in your hand, hearing the fridge door squeak and just watching you start at the top of the fridge, working your way down the fridge, anything you can put in your mouth.
Just grazing.
And then, yeah, but not being aware of it.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware that I did it. I didn't know that I did it. And then there's another one. A friend said, we went to lunch in Manchester and I walked in and you were on your laptop and you were leaning over and eating somebody's leftover cake off the other table. So I didn't know what I was putting in myself or that I was doing it.
You were just 17 when you left your family home in Kidderminster for Southampton. How well equipped were you for looking after yourself?
The real world was quite difficult for me then because I literally had to cook for myself and I had no clue. I was lived in this shared house in Southampton and I blew my dole. I was doing a volunteer thing with community service volunteers and I remember getting my first check from the dole people. And I bought a Walkman and the double cassette of Pink Floyd, The Wall. And then realised I ain't got any money to buy any food. And so for 2 days I didn't eat. And then this other guy in the house came back one night drunk with a Chinese takeaway.
Yeah.
And I didn't eat what was in those days called foreign food.
Yeah.
But I was so flipping hungry, he gave me the leftovers. And to this day, I still remember that meal. It was the greatest meal I've ever eaten.
What were the leftovers?
Mainly the sauce from sweet and sour chicken.
Yeah.
So it was the sugary sauce.
Yeah.
So I was slopping that up. There was some egg fried rice, which seemed very exotic.
Yeah.
And there were some spare ribs, dry ones, not with the sauce.
Yeah.
And, that was a bit of a challenge even then. But I loved it. I absolutely loved it. But then all of a sudden I thought, well, you know, why? You don't actually not like foreign food. You've just never had it. So
yes.
then I would just eat anything. And that existed for about 30 years after that. I'd actually eat anything and everything.
Why did you suddenly leave and strike out on your own?
I started in the sixth form and I didn't do very well. And I was going to go to the local FE college, but I had to wait a year. And my mum basically said, you're not going to sit around the house all day eating Breville's and playing on your Atari and Dungeons and Dragons with Charlie Robinson. You better go out and get a job. But there were no jobs.
So but you'd started A-levels?
I'd started A-levels. I'd done like a month.
It surprises me you didn't do them, because you seemed to me someone that you put your mind to something and then you...
Yeah, well, I didn't put my mind to A-levels. There was more going on. So I went to a thing called Community Service Volunteers, and I got a train to Cardiff, which was a big thing for a teenager. Did it on my own. They gave me an interview. I said, I'll do whatever you want. I'll start, I'll go wherever you want, and I'll just do it. And they sent me to Southampton. And I was only there 4 or 5 months, but it was enough to get me to a point where I could claim to be a young adult, no more than that. And then from there, once I'd done that, I wasn't ready to go back to Kidderminster.
Yeah.
So I went to London. I lived in a little bedsit in New Cross Gate with a guy called Greg, who I went to school with. And we didn't have any jobs, but I applied for a load of jobs. And I got offered 2 jobs on the same day, a clerical assistant in the Department for Transport and the Environment and trainee library assistant in the headquarters of the Labour Party Library.
And you said that you felt like the King of London. Paint me a picture of your social life during that time.
It all nearly went wrong very quickly then, because we had the Labour Party staff Christmas party. I was 17. We think we're the King of London. And actually we're 2 teenagers from Kidderminster. We know
Is
nothing
there a
about
free
anything.
Bar?
Yeah, we got bladdered. And when I got into work on Monday, I was called up to see Larry Whitty, the General Secretary, right?
Oh, God.
Because Greg had graffitied on the wall, Tom Watson for El Presidente, which was quite literary for him. And the best day of my life with Greg Bryce was we couldn't afford to pay the rent. And he said, come on, we'll put some money on a horse. So we went to Camden, which is the exotic place to go, Camden in the 80s. We went to the World's End pub. There was an Irish bookies over the road. And he said, we'll put a place pot on. And this place pot came in. We'd got the money for the rent. We were literally, no one in London was better than us. We owned London. We went on. It was like, we were hugging each other. We were like holding the cash in our hand. Anyway, obviously we blew it all in a night. We still couldn't afford to pay the rent. But I mean, you do those things when you're young, don't you?
What incredibly sophisticated London food were you eating around this point?
Actually, my first day at the Labour Party, there was a very larger-than-life guy who worked in the sales department called Ted Higgins, who was a thespian. He'd been in The Archist 30 years before, but he was on the executive committee of the Campaign for Real Ale. And the first day he took me to the Tankard pub in Walworth Road, and they sold sausage sandwiches in a half a French loaf for 40p.
Yeah.
So I had that, and I loved that. But he bought me 2 pints of something called Bass Ale, which tasted terrible. But because he was like a grown-up and I was a kid, I drank this Bass Ale.
I know exactly what Bass Ale is, yeah.
Well, I went back to the library that afternoon. I fell asleep in my chair. I was so strong. And then luckily, Ruby ran away, as she used to look after me. She like would keep prodding me and waking me up. But I don't know. I mean, I should have been sacked, really. That was before Greg graffitied on the walls. They should have sacked me before he got to the Christmas party.
So you were from a political family, but what did this job teach you about politics that you didn't know?
Well, first of all, honestly, it was like winning X Factor being there for me.
Was that the moment where you thought, this is it? They're not getting me out of this building. I'm going into politics.
No, I didn't. Even then, they were the people who did politics and I was the kid from Kidderminster watching. There was a moment when this would have been about a year in, and I remember being on the South Bank having an afternoon to myself, and I read Robert Harris's biography, Neil Kinnock. And he talked about his background. He came from, you know, very strong working class background. And I remember sitting there thinking, well, hold on, that's me. I come from that background. Maybe I could do that. And I remember looking over and thinking, how do I do that? Could I do that? And then that kind of, the seed was sown then.
You had a time at Hull University, and then you return to Labour in the late 80s as a youth development officer. By 2001, you were elected an MP.
Yeah.
And by 2015, you were a deputy leader of the Labour Party.
God, no.
And there you...
I still laugh about that. It's very... I can't believe it.
Tell me what day-to-day life as a politician actually did look like when you got there.
Really, there's no off switch when you... I mean, if you get into that level, all your constant thoughts are there. You're mulling over ideas, issues, problems. For me, I mean, if I've got anything to thank Jeremy Corbyn for, he did rid me of a 35-year minute-by-minute obsession. Mm. I mean, when I walked away, I did stop thinking about it all the time. It was like a sort of shedding a very heavy overcoat.
Yes.
When I became deputy leader, obviously the Labour Party essentially went mad. And I was very sleep deprived, long and unpredictable hours. So I'd be grazing throughout the day. I'd have, you know, made great bacon butties in the members' tea room, but there'd be snacks, you know, there'd be leftover kebabs before I left the flat.
Were you putting weight on then? Were you aware that you were putting weight on, or was it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, over 30 years, I mean, I started putting pounds on from my early 20s, really. And then I'd make little tiny interventions and pull a little bit of weight off on crazy fad diets. The cabbage soup diet was the worst one ever.
Been there.
That was Kathy at the Amalgamated Engineering and Electrical Union gave me that. She still laughs about it. She regrets doing it because obviously she had to share an office with me and it's not great. But and then
was there any healthy food at all in the Commons?
There was plenty of healthy food, most of which I didn't eat.
Yeah.
So they were pretty good at, you know, I mean, I was just, it was very chaotic eating. It wasn't, there was no real rhythm to my day's eating. You finish work at 10 o'clock, 10:30.
And then so where'd you go?
I would go to Soho.
Mm.
And you'd have a few beers after work in the Commons. I'd end up in Little Italy or, in those days, K-Box on Frith Street, which is great for karaoke. And it would be, you know, you'd get in the early hours, you know, and that could, but that would be your weekend because on a Friday and Saturday you're doing constituency stuff. So I'd never went out on a Friday night, but I'd go out on a Tuesday and Wednesday. And so it's a very unusual life.
Yeah.
And I definitely, you know, I reached a point where I was going to die if I carried on, I think. I mean, I was probably diabetic for some years before I formally got a diagnosis. Like a lot of these things, you kind of have a tiny little whisper in your head, but you're sort of in denial. There's so much denial about all of this.
It feels like there's a degree of obsessiveness in the way that when you were eating and in politics, doing things to a level that other people would pull back from. And it kind of reminds me, during that time with the Lord Britain incident, and you believed this thing about him, you believed that he was part of a paedophile ring, it later proved not to be true. When you get your teeth into something in lots of areas of your life, do you have to see something through? Do you ever just pull back?
Yeah. If you're sort of zoning in on something, everything else is shut out.
Yeah.
And most of the time, that's really, that helps you in life, I think, because it allows you to get to be quite resilient and to quite often swim against the tide. But occasionally it takes over. You know, when I said before, there's still work in progress. I'm still working through all that stuff.
Yeah.
And now that I'm not, you know, spending 7 days a week, 100 hours a week on politics, there's much more time for reflection.
Yes.
And to just work all those things out.
But there were times when you received a lot of criticism from within your own party, many accusing you of undermining your boss at the time, Jeremy Corbyn, as leader. So what is it like to be accused of being a traitor by your own party?
Well, I mean, I suppose it depends who's accusing you of it. I mean, when you're being sworn at during Miners' Gala by Len McCluskey, it's a little bit uncomfortable because it's.
What did he call you?
I don't know. He used the F word though. I mean, with Jeremy, I mean, he basically, you know, I didn't undermine him, but I disagreed with him, and I had my own mandate. 200,000 people voted for me, and I felt very responsible. You know, I didn't like anti-Semitism and I was pro-European, and those were really the two issues I stood out on. Mm. And on both of those, I made private representations and they were just didn't take anything I said seriously. So I spoke out publicly.
You made a massive change in your life. Was that to do with Joe Cox?
I mean, Joe's murder was definitely the worst day of my life in politics. Yeah. I knew her, I knew Brendan. I mean, I sort of trained Brendan when he was a Labour student. Mm. I knew her friendship circle. I'd campaigned for her.
Yeah, these were people. They weren't politicians.
No, they were friends. People I had real time for. Mm.
Do you think that Joe's death had any impact on your ideas of mortality and your own health?
At that point, I was already on my health journey. I mean, it certainly made me value the life I've got more, I think.
How much have you lost?
How much weight?
Mm-hmm.
At my peak, I'd lost 8 stone, and then I put some back on in lockdown 3. And I had a bit of a setback because I thought I cracked it. I thought, I don't really eat sweets now and I don't eat sugary things. So I'm very disciplined in what I don't put in myself. But then lockdown happened and the cheese crisis hit the cheese making industry. And I read Ned Palmer's book, Your Guide to the British Isles Through Cheese, or The History of Cheese Making, and got a little bit obsessed with helping cheesemakers out. So I was ordering cheese by mail order, but they would only send it like by the chuckle rather than the little slice. And like I was eating like 2 kilograms of cheese in about 72 hours. And
as a goodwill deed.
Well, obviously, I'm a politician, right? I was selling it to myself.
You were obsessively eating cheese.
Yeah.
To help other people.
And I thought even then, like people were saying, you've not eaten 2 kilograms of Mrs. Kirkham's in the last 2 days, really, have you? And I was going,
I don't know why I'm laughing. That is a lot of cheese.
I would deny it, but I had. Like a drug addict.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I read a book by Dr. Jen Unwin. It basically said a lot of people give up sugar, then get another addiction.
Yes.
Very often cheese. And I remember sitting there thinking,
it's like whack-a-mole.
Because at one point when I literally reversed diabetes, I lost 8 stone. I no longer eat Mars bars and stuff. I literally thought I was the Buddha. And I was the happiest I've ever been. I was in equilibrium. I'd had a year. I was running 5K a day. I was lifting weights, riding bikes. And this sort of lockdown came, this sort of massive setback. And of course, what I'd really done was climb a very steep mountain, but I was only on the plateau. I wasn't at the peak. And there's another challenge. And so you learn a little bit more about yourself. But I'm now in a good state. I've got this thing where I've got this little reset thing.
Yeah.
So if I sort of drift off, I've got these rules that I apply to myself.
Go on, what are they?
Daily steps target, daily weigh-in, food logging, blood pressure logging. If I need to really go for it, I'll measure my blood sugars again, although I don't need to these days.
8 stone is, it's like a whole person.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not me. I don't think I've ever been 8 stone. Maybe when I was 10 years old for a little while. But I was thinking, it's like a whole Love Island person.
Yeah, so it's a lot of weight. Mm. I mean, I'll never, ever go. I know people who lose weight say, I'll never go back to that. And I will never go back to that.
When you arrived today, I expected that you were going to say, that was then with food, this is now. I've completely changed the way that I feel about food. And then I saw how you were when the kebab arrived.
Yeah.
And I think that's not true, is it?
Well, I mean, so there's things, it is really complicated, food eating. And there's things you can do. It's like, you know.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I remember doing a thing with Piers Morgan where he said, look, you know, basically fat people should stop eating.
Mm.
And it's so ridiculous that, right? Mm. At the end of the day, it is down to individual choice and decision-making, but the system is stacked against people.
Oh, know? Completely.
It's totally stacked against them.
I agree with that. I always say when you go into any of the coffee shops now, the big coffee shops, they've really got their snacks sorted out now. They're so delicious. And you've got these enormous, enormous biscuits that are about 350 calories. How are you meant to stay thin?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I don't eat any of that. So when I go in a coffee shop, though, I get irritated. I think, look, Starbucks, can't you just give me a no-sugar product?
Yes. And
the whole business model is a sugar economy. We've got sugar-filled high streets. And I'm not the only one that doesn't want to eat refined sugar in food.
So tell me a comforting, comfort food style snack that is healthy.
Chicken shish with chilli sauce. These days I can't even make the chilli sauce, so I don't have to put the sugar, so there's no sugar in it. Now, I tell you what I do, because sometimes I get them delivered now from Steph's in the Horse Fair, and there's not an option to just have it without the naan when you book it online. So I get it in the naan and I turn it upside down and I put it on the side and I say, will someone please eat that naan? Because even now I look at the naan, I just think, if I'll have a little bit and then it's gone. So when it comes to bread, it's still like a drug. Do you think I should have bought you some of that rather than a lamb kebab?
You could have literally brought me anything rather than that kebab. Tom Watson, thank you so much for comfort eating with me.
Thanks, Grace.
This episode of Comfort Eating was produced by Emma Roberts. The series producer is Leia Green, and the executive producer is Kathy Drysdale. The music was written by Axel Kakutier. Mixing and sound design was by Sammy L. Anani. If you like Comfort Eating, please leave us a review. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And use the hashtag ComfortEatingPod to get in touch about the podcast or share your own comfort foods.
This is The Guardian.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.